Previously on the Ron Van Dam Show.
I'm in a sex cave or something here. That's where people go to the bathroom. These aren't even my pants that I'm wearing. I don't know what the hell happened. I only have one kidney.
And now, today's episode.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
All right.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
All right, I'll do a show if I have to. I'm really not in the mood for this. Don't push me. Hey, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. Guess who I am? I am Ron Van Dam. Yes, how did you know that? What day is this? What year is this? Where am I? Where are my keys? An elephant or a giraffe? I can't tell the difference anymore. The giraffe is the one with the trunk. My nursery school teacher would be so disappointed in me. She saw such wonderful things for me in the future. Oh, I'm so sorry, Mrs. Brown. I wish I could offer you something, but I have nothing to give. I don't, I'm sorry. I'll tell you what I'll do. I will entertain you for half an hour, and in return, you need to be quiet. Did anybody ever tell you that you talk too much? Well, you do. In the background, the theme music composed and performed for this program by Jason Shaw. What a fine individual he has turned out to be. John Shanahan, oh my God, what a wonderful comedian, writer. Thank you so much, John, for everything that you do for this program. Your check is in the mail. Unfortunately, I don't know where you live. And Nicole, oh, Nicole Reed, she books many of the national interviews that we do on this program. She also is that British girl that you hear at the beginning of the program. Thank you for everything that you do. I'm just trying to figure out how that's significant to me in some way. And the Purple Planet people with some of the background music. You put it all together, and what do you got? All right, fine. Well, spring is here. Holy crap. Yay, wonderful. Fireworks, other thing. Everybody's happy. I'm one of the few people on the planet. That's the end of the sentence. I'm one of the few people on the planet that really doesn't like spring all that much. I don't. The winter was wonderful. What a wonderful stream of excuses the winter was. Oh, let's go out. Let's go out. Let's do this. Oh, it's too cold out. Yeah, you're right. It is cold. I didn't have to do any. Can you replace the storm windows on the house? I can't. It's too cold out. Oh, yeah, you're right. It's too windy. Oh, yeah, you're right. We'll wait for the spring when we can go out. Okay, all right, fine, we'll wait. What a wonderful string of excuses this was. Let's go jogging. It's the winter. It's too cold. I could slip on ice. Yeah, you're right. We'll wait till the spring. Well, the spring has come, and I don't want to do anything. This is the time of year when people get motivated to go out and do stuff. Come on, man. Seriously? Yeah, that's what they do. They do gardening. Gardening. What the hell does that mean? It means you go outside with a little shovel and you garden things. I don't know. Ron, don't you want to plant these seeds? No, I don't. Doesn't nature just plant things on its own? Like, if there's a wind kicks up, doesn't it blow seeds around, things start growing? Isn't that a nature thing? What do I, as a human being, what am I doing putting things in the ground and artificially making them grow? No. I know someone who has a vegetable garden, and sometimes they invite me over for a salad. By the way, inviting me over to your house for a salad is not a Kickstarter. I mean, it's not, it's going to go nowhere, really. I mean, I can go get a salad anytime from the supermarket, from the store down the street. I don't need to eat a salad from your garden, but they're very proud of it. This is my own tomato, grow my own tomatoes, my own cucumbers. I don't really want something that you grew. I don't know. It's a part of me. It's a part of me. No, I'm not eating a part of you. No. Did I ever tell you the story? I'm sure I did. Did I ever tell you the story? I was living in Rochester, New York. And myself and my wife, we'd started to, it was a beautiful property, lousy house, beautiful property. And we put together a vegetable garden the size of your head. I mean, it was huge. It was about 20 feet by 50 feet. It was like a huge garden. It would take a day to walk from one end of the garden to the other. I mean, it was huge. And I was younger, so I didn't mind doing things. To me, it's an age thing. When I was in my 20s and stuff, I'd do anything, you know, anything at all, because I had energy. Now I'm missing the energy part. So now everything I do is a mental struggle. It's different. But then physically I could do everything. I could touch my toes. Can't do that now. Can't touch my toes. I haven't touched my toes in like 20 years. No, I can't. It's a long way down there. I'm 6'3". If I want to touch my toes, I have to pack a picnic lunch. It's going to take some time. I can't go down there. I can't. Once I touch my toes, how the hell am I going to get back up again? I mean, seriously, it's a lot to ask. I have to get a schematic. I have to get a city planner over. It's just an engineer. I can't. Touching my toes is a whole big thing. I mean, when I would touch my toes, I have to actually put on the calendar. I'll do that Thursday. Thursday I'll touch my toes. Because it's just not, that's not that applicable for me. If I see a penny on the ground, I figure, now Lincoln's going to stay there because I ain't picking that thing up. I mean, I'm gonna break my back for a penny? No, 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 no. If I saw a couple of dollars, still, you don't understand. It's a long way down there. I can't, a suitcase full of $1 million, I'll hire somebody to get it for me, and we'll split it. Anyway, yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. Physically, it's a lot for me to touch my toes. I don't even know what my toes look like. I haven't cut my toenails in about 20 years as well. They're starting to curl up. For the 50th time, they're just curling upon themselves. I can't reach my toes. I have to hire people. I have to hire people to touch my toes. Anyway, okay, that's enough of that bit. So I had this huge garden with my wife, and we were planting everything there was to plant. I planted couch cushions. I mean, everything was in that. Everything was in that garden. Tomatoes, cucumbers, eggplant like you've never seen before in your life. Green squash. Everything. I planted everything back there. And it was beautiful. Green peppers, the greenest peppers you ever saw in your life. Green peppers. And we would go out to that garden every day and we would till it. I still don't know what that word means. I would go there until I was finished. I would till it. I would turn the soil over upon itself. I nurtured that garden as if it was my child, more than my child. And when the vegetables started coming up and the lettuce heads and all that stuff, we rejoiced like we were pilgrims. It was unbelievable, like the first Thanksgiving. It was so much of it. There was so much of it. And they were oversized because we had put Miracle-Gro down there. We were creating little vegetable monsters. Miracle-Gro, it grows miracles. It really, really does. So we did our first picking of the vegetables. It took some time. I had to put on one of those big straw hats to make it look like I was farming. You gotta look like the part, you know. And I remember that night we sat down at the kitchen table and we had this gigantic salad, and we took out this head of lettuce, and we put tomatoes on it. And some of our cucumbers, and it was a beautiful salad. And we looked at each other, and we were eating off of the earth, so proud of ourselves. And we're looking at our salad, and we're about to take the fork and get into that lettuce. And all of a sudden, one of the leaves are moving in my salad. And I said, hey, "Dear, look at this. My salad is so fresh that the leaves are moving by themselves." She said, "You know, that shouldn't be happening." And I turn over the lettuce leaf, and there is a slug crawling around on the leaf, making it move. A slug, ladies and gentlemen. There is nothing in nature that is more disgusting than a slug. It has no features at all. It's like a worm that went to school. It's an unbelievable sight. I nearly threw up within myself, we took those salads, we put them down the garbage disposal, and we continued to grow vegetables. We just gave them away to other people. We wouldn't eat that crap. And someone told me, you have to use pesticides and insecticides and everything with sides in it, and you have to poison those bugs out of there. Well, then how healthy is it for me to do this? So that was the end of my farming experience. Green Acres, no, it wasn't the place for me. I didn't go down to the general store to buy wheat. You know, there's none of that going on in my life. I was not brought up that way. I was not brought up on a farm. Did you ever meet somebody who said that they were brought up on a farm? And I think my reaction is supposed to be impressed, but my reaction is, oh, you poor son of a bitch. You had to work for your food. That's awful. Didn't you guys have a supermarket nearby? Couldn't you touch your toes? I feel bad for people brought up on farm. I mean, it looks very, very good on television and in stories. It's very, very pure, very natural. I have interviewed many people on this show who grew up on farms and have become very successful farmers, and they have very successful food products and things like that. They grow their own I don't know what to do. They grow their own slugs. You know, their eggs are fresh, right, straight out of the chicken. You know, like you put your mouth right up to the chicken and sucking those eggs right away. It's so fresh. But there's a part of me that says, ugh, that's too bad. That's too bad. That's unfortunate. I'm impressed, but that's unfortunate. You had to work too hard, I'm afraid. You know, I never had to. Not really, not me, no, sorry. I don't know. Yeah, that was the last time I had really, now I have a thing against eating really fresh vegetables. I'm always assuming that there's some bug crawling around that thing. And, you know, at some point during the bug's life, it took a crap on my pepper. I don't know, could have, I have no idea. Nature's a very strange thing. I did something that I thought was wonderful yesterday. Sat out on my deck. I have a little deck in the back of my house. It's turned into a poop deck because we feed the birds. We love the birds. The birds are beautiful. I love the birds. We feed the birds. But the birds, in return, poop in your area. They They do, and bird poop is very interesting. It's like mayonnaise. It's just well, thank you for the bird feed. I'm going to splot some stuff out of my bird butt onto your deck. How about that? It's a poop deck. Anyway, I'm sitting there on the deck, and we're enjoying the day. And all of a sudden, to my right sits a wasp. I said, what are you doing in my neighborhood? No. The bee kind of wasp. Now, bees, I understand that they create honey, you know. If I may be so familiar with you, honey. They make honey, and bees are important for the ecology and the chain of command in the animal kingdom. They do a lot of good things. They pollinate, they cross-pollinate, they do a lot of things, the bees. They have hives, unfortunately. I had hives when I was a younger child. I had to take medication, and we'll put this like goop on my arm. Bees are fine. I don't want to be stung by a bee, but I get it. I get them. You know, if I see a bee that's around me, I'll scream. But I go, but I get it. I get it though. But when I see a wasp, my question is, what the hell's what's your point? What do wasps do other than scare the hell out of you? What's your function, wasp? You're out to get me, and I don't know what you do. I don't think you make honey. To my knowledge, you may, I don't know. But I don't see your function other than to scare the hell out of me. So, and this is so horrible, it's so horrible. So I had to run inside like a scared little schoolgirl. And I'm not putting schoolgirls down. I'm not, because schoolboys would have the same reaction. It's just not a popular phrase. I was scared like a schoolboy. No, it doesn't work. Scared like a schoolgirl, sexist. But I get it now. So I run inside and spend the rest of the afternoon inside. That was my spring day, sitting out on my deck in a chair because of this one annoying wasp that would not go away. His name was Bob. Anyway. Yeah, it's true. It's true. I'm not a big spring person. I don't want to. Anyway, that's enough. My guest is going to join us momentarily.
Give the gift that says, I love you. The gift that says, happy birthday. The gift that says, get well soon. The gift that says, you're the reason I went into the priesthood. The gift that says, congratulations on not getting indicted. The gift that says, I want to cover you in warm chocolate pudding. The gift that says, good luck in clown college. The gift that says, thanks for removing my unsightly wart. The gift that says, sorry about giving you food poisoning. The gift that says, I'll see you in hell. The gift that says, remember the good times we had in prison. The gift that says, I want to make sweet love to you on the white sand beaches of Rio while your hot cousin watches. The gift that says, thank you for the kidney. The gift that says, you deserve all the best, but this will have to do. The gift that says, thanks, Jesus. Whatever you want to say, you can say it beautifully with a timeless gift from Phyllis Gorman's House of Macaroni Art on Route 94 just past the Rotary, across from Sweaty Palmer's Adult Emporium.
Craig Taylor joins us now. He's an author of New Yorkers, which is an incredible book. I've been looking forward to speaking with you, Craig. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm from New York, so this is of special subject matter to myself. Actually, when I read the book, I kind of got a little tingle in my body, like I felt like this is a love thing going on, to be honest with you. This is not the first time that you've written into the world of different locations, is it?
No, I spent 13 years in London, England, and wrote a book called Londoners about that city, and then got the chance to head to New York.
That's great. Why the fascination and why the subject matter of these locations?
Well, I was living in London. It was naturally fascinating to me looking at the people around me on the subway And after that book came out, I was offered a chance to speak to 200 New Yorkers about life. And when you get that kind of offer, you better take it, because you can learn about everything in that city, as you know.
Are you a New Yorker yourself?
Not at all. I come from Vancouver Island. I grew up on the west coast of Canada. I left when I was pretty young, but I'm definitely an outsider. I was always an outsider in the city, but sometimes being an outsider means that New Yorkers will explain things to you, often at great volume.
Many people that are listening to the show have not been to New York, and when we say New York, we're not necessarily talking about the whole state. We're talking about the city somewhat. Isn't that true?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. When you go to New York for the first time, I've been told it's like a brick hitting you in the face. Is this Disney World? I mean, it's overwhelming in every sense of the word, yet it's so different. Is it a culture shock for most people?
Absolutely. And one of the strengths of a book like this is that you can have all of these different voices and these different point of views. Mm-hmm. So you can have the voice of a born and bred New Yorker who's known nothing else since birth. And then there's also the voice of a young man named Antoine who takes the Greyhound bus from Arkansas and shows up at Port Authority and steps out into the energy of the city and feels it in for the first time. So one of the things I love about this form is that you can get that point of view as well as the point of view of others. But for many, it's definitely overwhelming.
It's amazing because not only people from this country, but from all over the world, their first encounter is that same spot, which is
phenomenal. Yeah, and again, there's the chance to tell the story of new immigrants, first generation, second generation immigrants, of people who are watching the city change, watching their neighborhoods change. Helping their neighborhoods change. It's a great way to get that kind of collage of different experiences because they're all there.
Yeah, especially if you like to eat. It's all.
Yeah, and if you ignore food in New York, you're like, what kind of book would ever do that?
The book
starts with the five senses. It starts with people talking about different senses, and there's a connoisseur in there who talks about, you know, you have to have strong food choices in the city. You have to know where to get the best things at all times.
Yeah. It's true. It's got everything. When I lived in New York, I met a lot of people who lived in Brooklyn, which is just across the Brooklyn Bridge, which is like right there. And yet, a large number of people I knew in Brooklyn had never been to Manhattan, which is the downtown, the city area. It was like they were going to a different country. I could not believe that they were telling me the truth, but that's the case sometimes.
Yeah, people are very attached to their boroughs, and when you know, a lot of them talked about taking the train home, and you know, you have a life, perhaps you deal with Manhattan, and for a lot of them, it's that train home that takes them to Queens or the Bronx or to Brooklyn, and so the attachment to your neighborhood is a fierce one. That's where you're from.
Yeah. Do you plan to do any other cities?
I'm not sure. I think it takes a very long time to do these books. It's about 6 years, meeting 200 people, getting to know people. It's a very invested process, and I wouldn't want it any other way. It's got to happen that way. You have to spend time with people. So I don't know if I'll go off to Fort Lauderdale or to Tulsa or another place.
Oh, yeah. If
you, we'll see.
If you have to spend...
What could you do after New York and London, too?
Right.
That's the other question.
I figured you'd do Hawaii, stay there for 6 years, and you'd be happy.
Maybe.
Yeah. Is Fuji a city? I don't know. Okay. New York not only is it the center of the universe in a sense, but it's had just about every nationwide tragedy you can think of. It's gone through a lot. And we always do a comparison between the strength and resilience of New Yorkers to going through hell sometimes.
Yeah, there's definitely a specific kind of New York resilience. And for me, it was, there was the day-to-day resilience that a lot of people showed. But then there was also this big-ticket resilience when the big things hit. And, You know, in the book, there's an account of a father and daughter who are clinging to each other in the Hurricane Sandy floodwaters, and there's a 9/11 cop who's dealing to this day with the degenerative nerve disease that's been brought on by the toxins he encountered, and then obviously the healthcare workers are in the book, you know, the ones who are wrapping the bodies of COVID patients. So there is a kind of resilience in New York that is profound, and I remember saying to a New Yorker, you know, like, when would you leave? And he said, well, when something really big happens, then I'll leave New York, but not just a terrorist attack, not just a pandemic, you know, not just a financial crisis. Something really big has to happen. And that was the attitude I saw again and again. It was like, you know, you just had this resilience. You were there for a reason. And and when opportunity came, you had to step up. So it's there.
It's also interesting what the city's gone through, in a sense, economically. I don't know how much that was approached, but in the sense that it's almost prohibitive to live in New York City and have a decent lifestyle, as opposed to decades and decades ago, where you didn't have to have a lot of money. There were a lot of different types of neighborhoods that you could exist very, very well, or at least well in. But now it's like an apartment is like a one-bedroom apartment's over $1 million. It just gets a little weird.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of the interviewees in the book spoke about that income inequality, that wealth divide. And there's a big section about the rich in the book where I don't really talk to the rich, the super rich. They're often not the most interesting people to speak to. But speaking to their nannies, their personal staff, their sommeliers, that is where you get a sense of just, you know, how much money it takes to be in the city and what happens, what your experience of New York will be if you don't have that money, which is which is very different and very different than it was 20 or 30 years ago.
It is. On the other hand, there's not a thing that doesn't happen through New York. Any concert, any performer, any food, any culture, anything is always goes through there. Always it's always there.
Yeah, and that's the trade-off, I think, is, you know, people might not make a lot of money, but they want to experience this, the unique nature of the city where you're given access to the most extraordinary people and you're allowed proximity to things, to events and people you might otherwise never encounter. Yeah. So there is that trade-off of knowing that you might have to give up something to be there, but you are going to encounter a quality of life. What Vivian Gornick calls the sheer taste of world that you might not encounter anywhere else.
Yeah. It's a fascinating book. Can people follow you somehow? Not in a stalking manner.
Yes. Twitter. My Twitter handle is CDL Taylor. And, my website is Craig D as in Delta Taylor.com. So those are the best places to get in touch, but I'd love to hear from listeners who have their own experiences of New York.
Yeah. It's New Yorkers and, it's available everywhere and, pick up his other writings too, and who knows where he's going to be next. You don't know. You could pop up anywhere a few years later.
Very true. Yeah. Okay. That'll be the surprise.
Craig, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much for your time today. Well, that'll do it for me today. You have been wonderful. Thank you so much for your time. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. I'm going to use different words to talk with. That should be amazing. Yeah. And if you're lucky, I may even touch my toes on the air. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace.